Chapter 6.
After the success of their first mission, Aiden felt emboldened to ask for everything she felt her team truly needed. Unfettered access to certain classified information, top-notch weaponry and equipment, and various specific materials.
Reasonable requests if expensive, Fursio had mused as he perused the extensive list. Will that be all?
Uncertain as to whether he was being serious or sarcastic, Aiden had replied in the negative.
Well, there is more, he had said. First, you'll all be getting promotions, so congratulations, Captain Versio. Second, I have a ship ready for you. I've instructed the rest of the squad to meet us there. Feel free to bring a bag of personal items if you'd like, as I'm assuming this will be your new home for some time to come.
There had never been room for anything sentimental in Aiden's life that she could recall. Her bag had been packed within 5 minutes. The Corvus was a Raider-class corvette, sleek and gray and roomy enough at 150 meters long to accommodate a sizable crew handpicked by Admiral Versio. For now, there were only two, a pilot, Adiana Caton, and co-pilot, Weston Morrow. They seemed to be both professional and personable, and Aiden anticipated no problems with them. The Corvus was, Aiden mused, the sort of vessel that would please everyone on the team. It had a hyperdrive and three engines for Miko to tinker with, and was armed with ion cannons, dual heavy laser cannons, concussion missiles, and turbo lasers. It had also, Versio assured the squad, been gutted and completely remodeled with the most up-to-date computer technology.
You'll take it on your next mission, the Admiral said,
walking with Aiden as she familiarized herself with the vessel. They had reached the cockpit to discover that Gideon was already ensconced there, going over the controls with an expression of satisfaction on his face.
And on any other missions when it is an asset rather than a liability. And, of course, as time goes on, we'll get you a full crew.
I thought Inferno Squad was a small, tightly-knit unit, Aiden observed. The pilot in her was excited about the opportunities afforded by the Corvus, but she did not like the idea of having several more people involved in what was supposed to be a unit comprising the four best of the best. Her father, as always, read her thoughts.
Miko might enjoy repairing things, but he's not a simple technician. You'll want him with you when it comes to fighting. You're all superb pilots, but you won't necessarily be available to fly all the time. A well-trained crew that does what it's told and no more will be a help, not a hindrance. Don't worry. They won't steal your thunder.
The last word was almost, but not quite, sneered. Aiden bit her lip. She wouldn't rise to the bait. Gideon, too, pretended not to have heard. Fortunately, Miko provided a distraction as he entered with a smile on his face.
Hello, Admiral Versio. Captain Versio.
His smile widened even further as he emphasized her new rank.
Look what I found, he said.
Hovering behind him, humming slightly, was a small droid about the size and relative shape of an overturned soup bowl. It was glossy black, with a single red photoreceptor front and center, and four smaller black ones on either side and below along its gently curving dome. Four articulated legs ending in pincers dangled in the air.
That's an ID-9 seeker, isn't it?
Asked Aiden.
An ID-10, actually, Miko said.
Fresh out of the factories, and I'm going to customize it for our next mission.
You seem pleased, Agent Miko,
Aiden said, trying out the title that all of them had now earned.
How about you, Agent Hask?
Very much so, Gideon replied.
A pilot may not get to do much piloting if I have my way. Also, Captain Versio, if anything happens to you, that puts me in charge, right?
Stick to Agent. Don't practice saying Captain in the mirror just yet,
Aiden shot back playfully.
This was an old, old joke between them, and hearing it trotted out was comforting.
Admiral Versio,
came Sen's voice.
I've just finished a cursory perusal of the databanks. I'm, if I may say so, stunned. We are the beneficiaries of your experience, sir, and I'm grateful.
You may all of you show your gratitude with success in your missions. I'll contact you with your next assignment. In the meantime, you should dedicate yourself to knowing every centimeter of this vessel. With a nod, but not another word, he strode down the ramp, leaving the team to gaze after him. So, Miko said, with his usual gift for breaking the tension, it looks like the rest of us got our birthday presents. He tapped the droid on the top of its hovering frame. What is it you want, Captain? Aiden snapped her gaze from the retreating form of her father to Del's open visage. I just want to train. And so she did. While Miko busied himself with the droid, Hask piloted the Corvus as often as he could get away with, and Mirana sequestered herself, going over the most up-to-date intel, Aiden trained with a single-mindedness of purpose. She had recovered from the injuries suffered on Yavin 4, but she was stiff from enforced inactivity. She had lost her edge. She wanted to recover, no, surpass, her normal range of motion, speed, and strength as soon as possible. She ran and worked with trainer droids in holographic battle simulations, pushing herself hard, eating meals designed less for taste than to perfectly suit her body's needs. She flew the Corvus both with Gideon, Katon, and Moro as co-pilots and solo, taking it through its paces until she knew its movements and moods as well as she had known those of her TIE fighter. She practiced with all the weapons that the team would have access to and went hand-to-hand with anyone and everyone who was willing to spar with her. At night, she would fall into her cabin on the Corvus, exhausted and bruised, then sleep the sleep of the dead and wake before dawn to do it all over again. And when Admiral Versio contacted them with the next mission, they were ready. The missions were generally not long-term. Most, like their first, could be conducted in the span of a few well-planned hours. The majority, also like their first, hit closer to home than Aiden had expected. Del, too, seemed a bit disillusioned by the lack of character displayed by some fairly prominent Imperials. I hadn't expected so many to be so willing to bite the hand that feeds them, he'd lamented once as they themselves fed quite well on a meal he'd seemingly conjured from nowhere. I'm not surprised, Sen replied. You work in Intel long enough. You see a lot of things. Not everyone can handle power wisely, Aiden said. I'm more than ready to go against the rebels, Gideon had said. We all are, Aiden said. But after their success with the Death Star, the Rebel Alliance is going to be extra careful with their secrets and make it harder for those willing to share them with the Empire. Besides, we're doing a lot of good weeding out the bad eggs in our midst. Without Imperial treason, the Death Star would be intact and the war won. I'm sure the Admiral will turn us loose against Rebel scum soon enough. Aiden was right. The call came. But it was not at all what they had been expecting. The Partisans. Aiden had accompanied her team to her father's office, excited to learn that they would, at long last, get to strike against the rebels. But the Partisans? She glanced at her fellow squad members, all of whom looked as stunned as she felt. Not all, she amended almost at once. Sen alone did not appear to be surprised. Sir, said Gideon slowly, it was my understanding that all of the Partisans were destroyed during the mining accident on Jeddah. Oddly, Aiden's father looked pleased at the comment. He turned to his daughter. Aiden Versio, everyone in your team has level 4 security clearance. You may speak freely. Yes, sir, Aiden replied. She knew what he wanted her to say. The incident at Jeddah was not a mining accident. It was the first test of the Death Star. The site was selected for several reasons, one being that the destruction of Jeddah City would eliminate Guerrera and his partisans. Versio nodded perfunctorily and turned his attention to Sen, an eyebrow raised. She cleared her throat.
That's partially correct, Sen said. While we have confirmed that Saw Gerrera himself and many of his colleagues did indeed perish on Jeddah,
We have evidence that there were several individual partisans who were not on the planet at that time.
Sir? It was Del, who did not usually speak up at these meetings. The partisans were never a major threat. They were always Saw's group, and their methods were too extreme for the Rebel Alliance. Even if there are some of them still out there, surely they'll just die out?
As you say, Agent. They were always Saw's group. We had anticipated we'd seen the last of them with his death. Perhaps a final bloody skirmish here or there as they ran about directionless and furious. That's not been the case.
He looked at them with a grim expression.
A group has arisen to fill the void. They call themselves the Dreamers.
Gideon scoffed.
Pretty name for a terrorist group, he said. Dreams. Hope. These are the things that those on the losing side cling to. These Dreamers identify themselves clearly as Saw Gerrera's partisans, and they seem to have sprung from nowhere. They are no longer limiting their fanaticism and viciousness to the random bombing or sneak attack here and there. They know things, secret things, codes and names and dates of events that a handful of suicidal followers should not be able to know. They are targeting with surgical precision.
Iden thought she hated rebels, but as she listened, she felt a cold knot in her stomach at the picture her father painted. Violent, almost sadistic terrorists, unencumbered by the Rebel Alliance's so-called morality, were apparently in possession of highly sensitive, imperial information. There would be no moral high ground here for these Dreamers to claim. Just blood. Imperial blood, and buckets full of it. It didn't matter to Saw Gerrera's partisans whether it came from moths, or laborers, or children.
So, Saw Gerrera is now a martyr, said Miko.
The fewer they are, the more they feel like everything they do counts. They're going to double down on the violence, and if, as the Admiral believes, some kind of sensitive material has fallen into their hands, they're going to exploit it as much as possible while they're still alive to do so.
Miko is absolutely right about the nature of these terrorists, Versio said. We need to recover whatever information has fallen into their grubby, blood-soaked hands. Once we have that, they will once again be reduced to an angry, impotent handful of soon-to-be extinct malcontents. But to do that, we need more information about them. Apparently, the recent escalation of violence has turned the stomach of at least one of their members. We have a lead on a defector, not from the Dreamers, unfortunately, but from a smaller, less organized group. At this point, any information from any partisan is helpful.
He pressed another button, and the holographic image of a Sullustan appeared in the center of the table.
This is Bok Narg. He fought alongside Gerrera since before the formation of the Empire. He claims to have been having doubts about the partisans for some time and now finally sees the futility of that cause. He wants to throw in his lot with the side that will win. He claims he has information on where the Dreamers have been getting their intel.
And you believe him?
Asked Gideon, a slight hint of doubt in his voice.
I believe our agent, who's been meeting with him for some time now, and I'll say no more about that. Their task is done. Ours, yours, is to extract Bok and bring him in. We need to know everything he knows, and I do mean everything. Any further questions about the importance of this mission?
There were none. Iden felt a flutter of excitement. This was big. Their biggest job yet. They could be making a real difference.
Good. Now, Captain Versio, what is your plan?
Every briefing for every mission ended this way. After the Admiral had outlined the objective, he turned to Iden and challenged her to create a plan on the spot. Every time he did so,
Iden had felt the familiar sinking, the tightness of the worry that this time, this mission would be the one that went wrong. The one she'd fail. And every time, she shoved that thought deep down inside her mind and shut the door on it. "First, I need to know what Box Contact knows," she said. The extraction would transpire at the Telic Station and Trading Post. Located along one of the major hyperspace lanes, it was nominally controlled by the Empire, but riffraff of all varieties stopped here to repair, rest, and refuel. There was a stormtrooper presence, and Imperial ships came and went frequently. But nobody appeared to look too hard at anything. The Corvus docked without incident in Bay 47, allegedly to put in for refueling. When Kaiton and Moro shut down the engines, everyone was silent for a moment. "Well," Iden said, "here we go. Our first shot at the rebels. Lieutenant Hask," she allowed herself to smile at her old friend, "you have the honor of getting things rolling." "With pleasure," he said, returning her smile. Over the last few weeks, Gideon had stopped trimming his hair and shaving. His normal spit-and-polished appearance was now just untidy enough to look like he was a civilian pilot, perhaps one who sometimes ferried dubious cargo. He turned to his co-pilot, what Miko called his masterpiece, the revamped seeker droid. "Follow," he instructed. The droid bleeped and buzzed acknowledgement, gathered its legs beneath it, and accompanied Gideon as he strode down the ramp. Everyone on the Corvus was silent, watching through the droid's feed as it and Gideon made their way through the crowded station to a place called the Singularity, a watering hole slash club, where the drinks flowed freely, deals were made, and a variety of pleasures were enjoyed. The decor seemed to be inspired by the club's name. The walls and furnishing were black hole dark, and the establishment's front was a wide opening that narrowed and grew dimmer as one went deeper inside. Some of those cloistering in the heart of the Singularity looked as though they had been there for some time and were not eager to leave. Perhaps it was this architectural choice, or perhaps it was mere coincidence. But the Singularity was one of those rare places where the Empire looked the other way if some crew members of the various Imperial ships chose to relax in ways that weren't strictly approved. "Of course we know about the Singularity," Sen had informed them when the meeting site was floated. "We are aware of several Imperial officers who are regulars. We've been gathering information in order to blackmail them if we ever need to bring them in line." Iden winced a little as Hask and the ID-10 entered the club. Loud, arrhythmic music pounded, and the singers, a pair of round-bodied, stick-legged Palawick, had screechy, ear-rupturing voices coming from tiny mouths at the end of stalk-like muzzles. "No wonder people like to do shady business here," Iden commented. "You can't hear anything." "Droid," Del said. "Mute music." The droid booped and, thankfully, filtered that particular cacophony from the rest of the audio-visual feed. Now that Gideon was in position, it was Iden's turn. She rose and picked up her white helmet as Del slid into her vacated seat at the console. She'd never formally served the Empire as a stormtrooper, but as a TIE pilot, she was used to helmets, and she had spent plenty of time in one of the plastoid uniforms over the last few days, training to move easily inside it as if she'd been a trooper for years. Everything was standard issue so as not to blow her cover. Everything, except the heads-up display inside the bucket. It had been reconfigured to show the same images that the droid was transmitting to the Corvus. "Report, Inferno 2," she said quietly.
"This looks like a good place,"
Gideon said. He had been surgically fitted with the same tiny plastoid ear device he and Sen had worn on their first mission. Any sentence with the word "good" in it meant that all was going according to plan. A sentence with the word "rough" meant trouble, and "stinks" meant danger. "Copy that," Iden replied. "I'm taking a position." She looked at the two who would be staying with the ship. "Be ready for anything," she said.
"You too, Captain,"
Miko said, and Sen added, "Good luck." Iden donned her helmet, picked up her blaster, and descended the ramp, moving with the typical casual but alert movements of a stormtrooper on patrol. While the space station wasn't exactly crawling with stormtroopers, they were a common enough sight that no one spared her more than a quick glance. Iden began her circuit of the area, a wide enough range so as not to attract attention, but close enough to sprint to the Singularity if firepower was needed, or back to the docking area if a quick escape was required instead. So far, the mission was 8 minutes old and nothing had gone wrong. So far. Gideon Hask was in high spirits. Hitherto, he'd served the Empire by blowing rebels out of the sky while piloting his TIE fighter, but this was different. Everything about Inferno Squad was different. The missions always held the possibility of exploding into danger and violence without warning, just like the fighting he had been more used to. Unlike going into battle, though, there was also a chance of that not happening at all. It kept you on your toes, and Gideon found he loved it. He was less excited that, yet again, he was playing second to Iden, someone 5 years his junior. At least this time, he was the one to make contact with the rebel deserter while Iden patrolled in her white armor. Really, the successful outcome of this mission rested squarely on his shoulders. He'd have to make sure Bok trusted him and that the encounter came off casual and genuine to any observers. Initially, though, assigning this mission to Inferno Squad hadn't made much sense to Gideon. He'd been the one to ask right away why they were going in instead of the Imperial who had already established a connection with Bok. If the partisan informant genuinely wanted to get out so badly, surely he'd feel safer escaping under the wing of someone he knew and trusted.
"Navint says the agent has many more contacts than this one," Sen had replied. "Over a dozen things are in play. We can't risk having his cover blown. If he refers the informant to a trusted friend and things go wrong, he's still got plausible deniability. I don't think you appreciate how convoluted espionage can be or how many people are involved in it in one way or another."
That had rubbed Gideon the wrong way. He respected Sen's unique skill sets, but she certainly could be arrogant. Through the original Imperial agent, Bok had been told to look for a human wearing a worn brown flight jacket with exactly 3 patches on it. Gideon, of course, had seen several images of Bok, an older Sulliston with a scar-covered injury to his left eye. Inferno Squad's second-in-command settled in, sprawling comfortably at a table near the back. When the serving droid came up to him, he requested a Bespin Breeze, then casually looked around the place. Del had ascertained where security's recording devices were located and had hacked into them. He could stop them recording at any point if need be. Representatives of at least 2 dozen different species milled about. While the Empire worked with native species on planets under its purview, his immersion in the Academy and then on a Star Destroyer meant he'd had extended interactions with few. Now Gideon found the variety of individuals enjoying themselves, or at least pretending to at the Singularity, an entertaining spectacle. There were several near-human species represented, Twi'leks, Pentorans, Myrialans, but others who were distinctly not. When the drink came, the droid unobtrusively scanned it for toxins. When it beeped to pronounce the beverage safe, Gideon took a sip.
"Any sign of him?"
Iden's voice in his ear. At that precise moment, Gideon's eyes fell upon a figure working his way through the crowd.
"Good drink," he said.
"Copy that," Iden replied. But even as his commanding officer spoke, Gideon realized something that threatened to render the situation not good at all. Bok had not come alone. Accompanying him were 3 females and 2 males, a pair of Myrialans, 2 Pantorans, and a Togruta. These companions were dressed in alluring outfits and wearing chunky pieces of jewelry that looked to be made of inexpensive but brightly colored stones or beads. They were young and attractive and looked like they had come here to have fun. Their arrival was greeted with approval. Clearly, they were regulars. Gideon debated saying something like, "I bet things can get rough in here from time to time." But he didn't need to. His team had visuals. Perched now on Gideon's shoulder, the droid made a series of quick clicks. Back on the Corvus, Del swore under his breath. "Box brought friends, and the droid reports they're armed," he said. "Their jewelry's fake. It's made with explosives that will detonate on impact." "Damn it," Iden muttered. The Sullustan deserter was supposed to come alone, and Infernal Squad had anticipated being halfway back to Coruscant shortly thereafter. "Sen, did any intel suggest Bok might try to set us up?" Iden wondered if this was a suicide mission. Once, the Partisans had been so focused on killing Imperials, they regarded civilian casualties as merely an unfortunate side effect. But they'd always protected their own hides. That had changed with their leader's demise. According to the intel her father had shared with Inferno Squad, several Partisans had already demonstrated that they would be happy to follow Saw, as long as they took Imperials with them.
"The jewelry's a new wrinkle," Sen said. Her voice was tight. "We haven't heard of that before. We know that suicide attacks are becoming increasingly common. I don't know if that's the plan here. Jewelry clasps can easily be broken and fall off, or be left in a restroom. Del, have the droid home in on that Mary Ellen's face."
The droid obediently did so. Sweat was gathering along the side of the Mary Ellen's hairline, and her nostrils flared with rapid breathing.
"That's not good," Miko murmured. "Quiet, Inferno 3," Iden snapped. A boisterous table of humans, their clothing too shabby for their shaved cheeks and military-styled hair, shouted out to one of Bok's younger companions and waved.
"Some of your flagged for blackmail Imperials?" Del asked Sen. The Mirialin waggled her fingers at the humans and said something to her companion, one of the Pantorans.
"That one is still playing the game," Sen said, translating as fast as the ship's computer could have. "Right now she's talking about a party later on and who they're going to bring. I don't know if her friend is in on Bok's plan to get out."
Gideon couldn't tell either, but he didn't like it. When Bok's single good eye met his, Gideon lifted his glass and waved the Sullustan over as if they were old friends. Bok waved back and said something to the Pantoran who stood at his side. The younger alien laughed and playfully linked her arm through Bok's as they moved toward the table together.
"Damn. Been a while, old friend," Gideon said. "Buy you and your companion a drink."
"Whatever you're having is fine, old friend,"
Bok said, his voice raspy. That was the code phrase. Whatever was going on, Bok still wanted out. Or wanted Gideon to think he still wanted out. Gideon gestured to the serving droid and said, "Two more Bespin breezes." It bleeped and scurried off.
"They're all nervous," Del's voice said in Gideon's ear.
So was Gideon, but he was more excited than nervous.
"Kind of a rough place for you," he said to the young woman, hoping the code word would be picked up by his team. The Pantoran laughed.
"Don't you worry about me, sweetheart."
Was that a threat? Even as he pondered whether to move to the next level of code, working in the word stinks to imply that he had a bad feeling about this, Bok leaned over and whispered in his ear.
"Shirima wants out too," he said,
pitching his voice so softly that only Gideon could hear. Gideon and the droid.
"Only room in the cockpit for one other pilot," Gideon said, as the serving droid rolled up with their drinks.
Now it was the Pantoran's turn to whisper as she leaned in and pretended to flirt with him.
"Both of us or none." "We should abort,"
Sen's voice.
"Negative,"
was Iden's response.
"Inferno 1, we should abort right now."
Sen's words were urgent and against protocol.
"What's in it for me?"
Gideon replied to the Pantoran, pitching his voice equally softly. Shirima lifted one hand and toyed with her white hair, drawing his eyes toward her bracelet. What looked like the bracelet's clasp was in fact a tiny data chip.
"This,"
the Pantoran said.
What's in my head and what's on the chip?
Bach muttered. Sen didn't like any of this one bit. Gideon should have tossed some credits on the table and walked out. All her instincts, honed by her specialized training, were screaming at her that they were walking into a trap. Her gaze flickered to the multiple streams of conversation going on around Gideon and the two apparent deserters. Some threads were already translating, some she did herself.
Someday I'm gonna get me a place on some little planet.
More than your life is worth to cross a buckethead.
Never, ever gamble with the Gamorrean.
Price of grain is climbing so high.
Never seen him here before. Both of them.
It was the male Pantoran. Sen closed her eyes and focused, listening with her entire being, catching the two voices over the inane chatter of club attendees.
Are they trying to recruit him?
Talking to Bach.
Looks imperial to me.
Sen's eyes snapped open.
Inferno 2, they've made you, she said.
Aiden spoke, even before Sen could draw breath for a follow-on comment.
Inferno 2, I'm headed your way. I am closing this down. Get out of there, now!